Well, I believe that Andy and John and Mike are on deck now for the elk concession tags. If we can get to those next under the Division of Wildlife, action item number 19. John, are you going to kick this off or Andy?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission and Secretary Roebling, John Canta, Terrestrial Section Chief. I'm going to go ahead and turn it right over to Andrew Norton. Today, he's going to give us a presentation on elk contingency licenses. And with having some of the commissioners new from last year, we'll run through kind of how that works and the information that we put together. And then finally, our recommendation for you guys to take action on today. So I'll jump off, let Andrew talk, and I'll be back on at the end for questions.
Good afternoon, commissioners, Chair Olson, Secretary Roebling, Andrew Norton here, senior big game biologist at the Game Fish and Parks. Just check here. Can you guys see my screen right now?
Yes. Yes.
All right. And is it full screen?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, as John said, I'll be talking today briefly about the elk contingency licenses. I presented on this information about the same time last year. Obviously, conditions were much different across much of the state, and I'll get into that through the presentation today. Start off with just a few slides on background. I apologize, it's probably redundant for a lot of commissioners that heard this last year, but I just want to refresh everyone's memory of what the contingency licenses are. They were established in our elk management plan back in 2015. The purpose of these was to provide kind of a short-term response to short-term drought. Important to note, these are very different than what we go through every 2 years with the annual biennial season setting structure. That's where we go through the objectives that we have with elk management units within the Black Hills. We discuss a little bit about our overall objective, which is 6,000 to 8,000 elk overwintering in the Black Hills. That's kind of more of a long-term population goal. This is more when cattle leasees are grazing and conditions are poor. A lot of the times those leasees have to leave their allotments early. And then the short-term response with elk would be that we don't want to exacerbate overgrazing on some of those allotments. So to provide a little bit of relief, these contingency licenses would be available in units where we see exceptional drought in one specific year. If there is something like a long-term drought or long-term degradation to habitat where we're seeing either elk, cattle, or other wildlife, or some sort of environmental condition that causes poor habitat, and we need to lower the sustainable population, then we would address that at the biennial discussions. But this is just, again, just a very temporary thing. And the result is that it's not intended to impact populations. Elk are going to be very different than cattle management. We can't harvest an elk and then just replace it the next year. It's not like cattle taking them off an allotment. If we harvest a female elk, she's obviously gone forever and obviously no ability to reproduce in subsequent years. So we don't want to have detrimental impacts to the herd to take care of just a short-term problem. So this concept was also adopted or continued in our update to the elk management plan. In our 2021 Elk Action Plan Strategy 1C, all the details are specified. And actually, this concept was adopted in administrative rule where a maximum of 20% of all elk antlerless licenses available in a hunting unit could be allocated towards these contingency licenses. Again, this is in line with not wanting to have detrimental effects to our overall population objective. Again, for example, short-term drought, we reduce the population by, let's say, 50%. That may take 5 to 10 years to recover, whereas that drought could end like it did last year very quickly after the meetings we had. What we look at is summer range conditions. We've worked with NRCS and the Forest Service and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation to develop a forage production model that we run late summer, evaluate those forage conditions, and then meet with Forest Service staff to determine how many licenses could be allocated based on a decision support table. Quick get into the meetings with the Forest Service and NRCS. Staff meet with those folks a few times a year. The most important related to these contingency licenses occurs in late summer. We delay that as long as possible, usually to about the third week in August, at which time we get the most updated forage production model. Now, that model was created by NRCS in collaboration with Game Fish and Parks, Forest Service, and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Primarily looks at precipitation. It's not just the last couple months, it's the last 2 years of precipitation. It's weighted according to specific times of years of the year when precipitation is more important. It accounts for the fact that if you have a really wet month, it's not going to keep on accumulating precipitation. It caps it at a certain point. And then importantly, this model is calibrated and validated against actual clipping data on the ground in the Black Hills. And there's general agreement. The model's adjusted to be specific to elk management units. The figure on the right here is actually ranger districts, which don't quite match up perfectly with our management units. So when we have discussions with Forest Service staff, we do have to obviously try to compare a little bit here between the Northern Hills, for example, covers 2.5 elk management units approximately. So we have those discussions. There's generally good agreement between Forest Service staff and what the model suggests. But when there are discrepancies, we discuss those and how that may impact the contingency licenses. So as I mentioned, there's a decision support table. This is created to provide some consistency so we're not just subjectively or arbitrarily determining a number of contingency licenses every year. Again, I mentioned that 20% cap. So you'll see in this table, nothing exceeds 20% of the antlerless licenses that are allocated in a specific unit. If you go from the top row down, that's more severe drought conditions. So the top row is 90 to 100% forage production, all the way down to the bottom row, which would be less than 70%, would be more of a severe drought that particular year. So you can imagine if the drought is more severe, usually these allotments are having cattle leave early. There's some concerns for negatively impacting forage that year, and that's when we might have more of a drastic response to increasing some of these licenses. Similarly, there's three columns here. So there's a decrease objective on the left here, which would be when we have too many elk in a specific unit and we actually want to decrease that population, all the way over to an increase objective on the right. And these are finalized every 2 years at the season setting meetings by the commission. So this is a good analogy would be if you're stocking cattle on a pasture and you think you can sustain 100 cattle out there in a typical year, for whatever reason, you only have 50 cattle and you put them out on that pasture. If the conditions happen to get dry throughout that summer, you're going to have a very different response than if you would have stocked 100 or 150 cattle. So if you've already got an overstocked pasture, you're going to want to remove more animals. Whereas if you're already understocked, you may not need to have any response to drought. And that's exactly what you see. An example would be the first two rows on the right there. There'd be no response if we want to increase elk, even if we have only 80% forage production. So this kind of gives us an idea and a cap on how many contingency licenses would be available in the units. Quickly jumping into results here, wanted to start by comparing last year to this year. The top left is statewide forage production from last year in mid-August, and then this year in mid-August. You can see conditions throughout the state were very different. I think this had some bearing last year because the perception was that not only in South Dakota, but across much of the West and upper Midwest, it was relatively dry conditions. And there's this perception that there wasn't much forage available. However, as I pointed out last year, there's this green spot and maybe light yellows there in the Black Hills in the southwest part of the state. And that had a big bearing on the discussions with contingency licenses. We actually had decent conditions. The Forest Service agreed with us that where a lot of our elk were in the southern part of the Black Hills, conditions weren't bad at all. And that resulted in a relatively few amount of contingency licenses, only 20 licenses, despite widespread drought throughout South Dakota. Again, Black Hills weren't that bad. So fast forward to this year, you see a lot of green on the map. However, if you look at just the Black Hills, they look pretty similar to last year. So again, perception is going to be important in scale of where we're looking at, where this drought occurs. So zoom into the Black Hills here. Again, as I mentioned, it looks very similar to last year. percentages of forage production are similar. The figure on the left here actually outlines our elk management units relative to the ranger districts in the small figure in the top center. And the legend here, the label on each elk management unit, the top is going to be that specific unit's objective. So for example, that northernmost unit says increase. That's where we're trying to increase elk, and that was again discussed the spring of this year. Below that is the forage production for that particular unit. So in unit one in the northern part of the hills there, we have an increase objective and 91% forage production. So although it's down because we want to increase elk, there's not going to be any contingency licenses, and that's why there's a plus zero for the recommended amount of contingency licenses. Move to the east there in unit seven, on the northeastern side of the Black Hills. There we actually had a maintain objective, so we were actually at a pretty good spot with elk. 82% was the forage production, and that resulted in 5 contingency licenses. One other thing that's important to note, I know there's a lot of concern last year that there was only 20 contingency licenses, but that was because we were at a stage where we were still trying to slightly increase our elk population. Based on our 2020 aerial survey, we were below objective, and across a lot of units in the hills, we were trying to increase populations. That changed, if you remember, back to the spring of this year, where we increased antlerless elk licenses nearly 50%, overall licenses increased 33%. And that was in an attempt to slow the growth. We didn't want to decrease elk populations. As you can see, there's only one unit that's decreased, but we definitely wanted to slow the growth and stabilize. What that means is there's a lot more antlerless licenses, and a higher percent, or a percent applied to a higher number of licenses, results in more contingency licenses. So what we ended up with was a total of 22 contingency licenses based on the decision support table. I've included the units that kicked in some licenses here. They're colored in red. Unit 2B, 2HIJ, 3BCD, and 7B, and those number of licenses ranged 5 to 7. So again, maybe folks are perceiving less drought conditions across much of the state, but there's actually more contingency licenses this year. That's a combination of more antlerless licenses available, and then just the forage production model turning on in certain areas where we did have more antlerless licenses available. So with that, I can take any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Andrew? I don't, Commissioner Bees has a question out the end here, comment.
So we're proposing to put out 22 cow tags because of drought. Is that right?
Through the chair?
Yep.
Yep, it's going to be 22 licenses. Again, if I zoom back to the statewide map here, you can see northeastern South Dakota. There's no drought at all. We're at 100% production, but there was a few pockets in the hills, particularly that south central region. You can see my mouse down here in the northern part of Unit 3, and then the northeastern part here, we had some dry conditions, and heard from Forest Service too in the northern part of the hills. There was potentially some cattle that may be going home early. I believe one or two allotments may go home 1 or 2 weeks early.
So we only have basically two producers that might be leaving out of the hills early. Is that right? Do you know where those are at?
Through the chair.
Go ahead.
So I'm not exactly sure which allotments, but they would be in this northern hills district here. This was last year, what they thought on the eastern side were some of the allotments they thought may go home early. I assume it's in a similar area, but again, they weren't very sure. It was just a kind of a point of speculation. I will point out last year that the number of allotments they thought were going home early when we met decreased by about half. So I think, I forget the exact number, but it might have been in the 20s or 30s. And then half of those actually went home early because we received some timely rains last year. But yeah, to your question, one or two, which would represent about 1% of the leasees affected in the Black Hills.
I guess what I'm getting at, if only two producers are moving out, and it's not even 1% of the cattle leaving the forest, I don't just see that's justification to putting licenses out like this. If we don't even know the foresters, don't even know if the producers are leaving for sure, is that right?
Yeah, through the chair.
Go ahead.
So I guess that's kind of the response of the decision support table, is try to create some consistency. But then obviously it's the commission's prerogative to adjust contingency licenses however they will. The example was, we were having the opposite discussion last year. I believe there was a leasee that was concerned about higher percent of cattle being impacted, and then that affecting the wildlife differently. And the decision support table is trying to kind of, I guess, disentangle that process and treat wildlife independently and say, what do we think forage conditions are spatially, and do we think that necessitates a response? But again, it ultimately, it's not impacting the overall population growth in these units. So it's just, again, a response to short-term drought, and whether that's necessary or not is obviously the prerogative of the commission here today.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to that.
Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, Commissioner Beese, I totally get what you're saying. And like Andrew said, last year we were having a conversation about it, the decision matrix putting out too few of additional licenses. And what I spoke to last year was that it's not perfect. What it does is helps us maintain some consistency from year to year. And it also, as Andrew's showing on the screen here, it absolutely ties back to those objectives. And so one interesting thing here, or I don't know if it's interesting, but one thing I would point out is in unit 7, Andrew, if you could point at that, because I can't use my, so unit 7, and then down in northern unit 3, that other hotspot that Andrew pointed out, that is areas where we are dealing with depredation and are trying to address those herds. That northern unit 3 is a great example. We've jumped up from 45 licenses a few years ago up to 135 licenses currently. Those are antlerless licenses. And so, yeah, it's not perfect. And I agree, if one were to drive through the Black Hills, you'd say, gee whiz, why is the Game and Fish adding licenses in? But it does help us maintain some consistency, and it does coincide with what we're trying to do with populations out there by unit and those objectives.
Just one other question, Chair.
Go ahead.
If we issue these tags, are those tags come off the sportsman's preference points, or those are just open tags? They don't go against anybody's preference points.
Through the chair, Commissioner, these would go just the same as our leftover antlerless licenses would go. Folks have the opportunity to use preference on them, but otherwise, no, it wouldn't impact their preference.
Anybody else have any questions for Andrew or John? I just asked, maybe John, is this these tags, are they important to relationships? Is that another underlying factor that should be considered here, as far as where the maybe the Stockman Association or any other representatives out there for your guys' efforts? Are they important for that?
Mr. Chairman, yes. And you know, I take you back to when we were developing the elk management plan, and you know, we wanted to set that elk population at 6,000 to 8,000 elk. And you know, there was a lot of discussion about drought and the number of elk that we would hold, and how that's how that impacts those permittees and producers out there. You know, the big difference between livestock and elk is, you know, we can pull livestock off and put them right back on, so to speak. With elk, you know, if we take them out and off of the landscape, it's going to take us a few years to replace those elk. Nonetheless, you know, as Andrew explained, we do monitor drought. We look at long-term drought, and we adjust licenses appropriately. And the big reason for that is to work with those producers and those folks that are running livestock on the land. And so to answer your question, yes, this was something that we put forward to help assure them that we're committed to addressing those numbers if conditions are in poor shape out there. So it does help with that tolerance with those landowner relations for sure.
Just as a reminder, where maybe I missed it, where are we at as far as the population objective overall?
I'll let Andrew answer that.
Yeah, through the chair. We're fortunately in a very good spot. When we flew in 2020, we were just slightly below 7,000, so well within that 6,000 to 8,000 objective. Our projections, we're getting right around 7,000 almost exactly, but that was a projection because we did not fly in 2022. We'll fly again in 2024, but we increased those antlerless licenses by 50% because we thought we maybe had increased a few hundred elk over 2 years, and we don't want to continue to increase and get close to that over 8,000 objective. So we're hopeful that when we fly in a couple of years here, we'll be somewhere around 7,000 or a little bit more.
Very well. Any other questions? If not, we need to take action. If we take no action, there's nothing, correct, Tom?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Kirschman, that is correct. So what you have in front of you is a recommendation of the 22 elk contingency licenses based on the information that Andrew described to you through the decision table based on the information that we have available to us through that forage production and our conversations with NRCS and Forest Service. Again, that is a recommendation you based on our elk contingency approach that is available to us. So it would be your prerogative to approve that or take some other action. So it would be based on you, but our recommendation based on the table would be the 22 elk contingency licenses. And again, those are antlerless tags only.
Yep. Discussion and or action.
I'll motion to move forward with the additional.
Okay, we have a motion by Bartling.
Second.
Seconded by Rissler to go with the staff recommendation on the antlerless concession tags and discussion on the motion.
Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Bartling. Well, this certainly isn't an area that's in my wheelhouse with elk and whatnot. We don't really see them in our area, but with the study that's been done and the information that Andrew and John have put forth, I think I put a lot of faith that when it comes to the drought and lack of forage and what that population could possibly be doing, I think this looks like it's a proactive approach to help maintain the herd population for the goals of the department. So I see it as a positive approach.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
You want to do a roll call? Because I think we've got enough to pass it.
Beans?
Me.
Spring? Aye. Bartling?
Aye.
Whistler?
Aye.
Malkin?
Aye.
Pittmeyer?
Aye.
Open?
Aye.
Six ayes, one nay.
Motion carries. Thanks, guys, for the presentation. Appreciate that.